What will Egypt's new president mean for the country's economy?
Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Egypt has a new president-elect. It's Mohamed Morsi, whose political party, the Muslim Brotherhood, was banned while former President Hosni Mubarak was in office. For more on what this means for the future of Egypt and its economy, let's bring in the BBC's Shaima Khalil. She is with us from Cairo. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, give us a sense of what we know about Mohamed Morsi.
Well, the most interesting thing about Mohamed Morsi, actually, is that he was never really considered one of the more charismatic characters, but he was very, very quietly spoken man. He was educated in the United States. He's an engineer, and he was in the high rankings of the Muslim Brotherhood. He was in the advisory bureau, and then he became the head of their political wing. Now, the big question is what that means for the rest of the Egyptians, and if they do see him as trustworthy as members of the Muslim Brotherhood do.
Has he said anything about his plans for Egypt's economy and how to bring it back after all the uncertainty of recent years?
Well, one of his big projects in his campaign was something called the Renaissance Project. And the Renaissance Project basically is bringing Egypt's economy back on its feet. He has got many advisories with a business background. The Muslim Brotherhood are known to be, you know, very savvy businessmen, but it still remains to be seen how that is going to translate in job creation, in bringing the economy back, and bringing investment back into Egypt.
And what about the military? We reported last week that they did what looked like a power grab to weaken the presidency. So is this a weaker office than it used to be?
Well, Mohamed Morsi may be the new president, but the military, the ruling military, are very much the leaders of this country as it stands. Because even though he did take presidency, the military are in charge of legislation because there is no parliament. The military are in charge of the budgetary. They even chose his chief of staff. They chose his minister of defense. And they've also chosen the time in which the constitution is going to be written. And actually, this is the real fight, Jeremy. As it stands, the ruling military holds veto over every article in this constitution.
The BBC's Shaima Khalil joining us from Cairo. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome, Jeremy. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, the board of the University of Virginia meets tomorrow to consider reinstating Teresa Sullivan to the presidency. Sullivan was ousted by the board a couple weeks ago, plunging the university into a public relations crisis. Marketplace's Amy Scott has the story now from our education desk at WYPR in Baltimore.
Members of UVA's board thought Sullivan wasn't moving fast enough to respond to challenges facing all public universities. There was pressure on her to cut costs amid declining funding from the state, to increase online education, and to better compete for top faculty and students. Kent Shabatar is president of Guilford College in Greensboro, North Carolina. He says many board members come from the business world.
They're used to change at a very different pace. So I think that's what's causing some of the disconnects.
It's not a corporation where you can just institute policy and everyone falls into line.
That's Kevin Carey with the New America Foundation, a nonprofit think tank. He says UVA doesn't need to adapt as quickly as other schools. It's cushioned by a $5 billion endowment, the largest per capita of any public university, and, at least until now, a stellar reputation. Guilford's Kent Shabatar says the scandal is a teachable moment for all of higher ed. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are down in global trading this morning, down about 0.5% in Hong Kong, 1.3% in Frankfurt, 1.5% right now in Paris. On Wall Street Friday, the Dow tacked on 67 points to close at 12,640.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
In the spirit of environmental conservation, the British government wants to put a price on nature. They've created a group called the Nature Capital Committee, which will put a dollar value, or I guess I should say pound value, on landscapes, river purity, and wildlife. Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
This landscape with its babbling brook and warbling birdsong might be described as priceless, but that's not good enough for Oxford economist Dieter Helm. He wants to know exactly what it's worth.
How much will we be willing to spend to protect that asset, to forego the other things we could do on that landscape, a couple of million, 100,000, or very little.
Helm is head of the new Natural Capital Committee. He says if you really want to protect a scenic view or a species like the Natterjack toad, you can't rely on vague and emotional arguments anymore. You've got to put a value on the asset.
We have trashed an enormous amount of our natural environment. So not placing a value on these things has been highly unsuccessful.
Putting a price on nature, on its recreational value, for example, won't be easy. But Helm says it's worth a try. The developers are wary of the new approach. John Stewart speaks for the House Builders Federation.
If we are to protect the natural environment because we say that it has a certain value, that has consequences, and one of the consequences is we don't provide enough housing.
Oddly enough, some environmentalists are also nervous about the new committee. Craig Bennett is with Friends of the Earth.
A lot of people's approaches to landscape is subjective, and that makes it almost impossible to really place a value on it.
And he says once you do put a number on a natural asset, it becomes easier to focus only on the economic benefits of development.
The danger is actually if this committee is used by parts of the government that want to just find excuses for building over some of our most precious wildlife sites.
But what price the Natterjack toad or the red-backed shrike? Dieter Helm says we must take the environment into account. And maybe the best way to save the planet is with an accountant. I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And finally, while we wait for a Supreme Court ruling on healthcare, the big question in the UK's High Court is whether Subway's meatball marinara sub has to be heated up before it's eaten. If it does, the government says it should be subject to a tax. But Subway says it needs to heat up the sandwich for food safety reasons. A decision in the case is expected after lunch. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.